Welcome back to the lab. Sources have been removed from this recording for compatibility with listening. Visit quantumdisciple.com to view the sources in detail. To the skeptic, the materialist, and the truth seeker. This is not a sermon. It is a systems analysis. For a long time, the church has treated atheism as an emotional problem, a result of anger, rebellion, or a desire to sin. And while that may be true for some, it is not true for the thoughtful skeptic. Most modern atheists are not running away from God. They are running toward reason. They are the children of the Enlightenment. They stand on the shoulders of giants like Carl Sagan, who famously established the rule of the modern age, quote, "Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence," end quote. The atheist argues that to believe in a creator without proof is an insult to the human intellect. They look at the universe, a world of cancer, tsunamis, silence, and confusion, and they refuse to accept magic as an explanation. They demand data. So let us grant the skeptic their premise. Let us agree that we should not believe anything without evidence. But this brings us to the uncomfortable twist. When we actually look at the hard data of the 21st century, when we look at the thermodynamics, the quantum physics, and the molecular biology, the arrow of evidence no longer points toward a random accident. It points with mathematical certainty to a mind. Section 1, the skeptic's high ground. Before we look at the evidence for God, we must define the alternative. The skeptic's position, often called materialism or naturalism, relies on a specific set of assumptions. To fairly engage with a skeptic, we must understand how they view the world. Point 1, matter is all there is. The premise is that everything we see is the result of unguided physical processes. There is no supernatural realm. As the astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson famously stated, quote, "We are stardust," end quote. In this view, we are not spiritual beings created by God. We are biologically recycled stars. Point 2, time plus chance equals everything. The argument is that given enough time, chaos will eventually organize itself into order without a guide. They argue that given 14 billion years, hydrogen gas eventually turns into people. Point 3, no design. They argue that the appearance of design is an illusion. As Richard Dawkins argues, biology is the study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose, but actually weren't. This is a fair, robust hypothesis. But like any hypothesis, it must fit the data. If the data contradicts the hypothesis, the honest scientist must abandon the theory. And right now, the data is breaking the theory. Section 2, the battery problem. For centuries, atheists took comfort in the idea of an eternal universe. If the universe has always existed, if it extends infinitely into the past, then it doesn't need a creator. It just is. But in the 20th century, physics made two discoveries that destroyed this hope. First, the law of entropy. The second law of thermodynamics states that in a closed system, usable energy always decreases. Think of the universe like a giant battery. Stars are burning fuel. Energy is spreading out. The universe is slowly winding down. The logic is simple. If the universe were eternal, if it had an infinite past, the battery would have died an infinite amount of time ago. We would be in the dark right now. The fact that the sun is shining proves that the universe was fully charged at some point in the finite past. It has a start date. Second, the BGV theorem. Three leading cosmologists, Arvind Bord, Alan Guth, and Alexander Vilenkin, proved mathematically that any universe which is expanding throughout its history cannot be eternal in the past. Think of it like rewinding a videotape of an explosion. As you play the movie forward, the shrapnel flies apart. If you hit rewind, the shrapnel moves closer together. Eventually, you hit a mathematical wall where the physics breaks down. You run out of time. This implies a space-time boundary. This is the moment where the clock reads, time equals zero. This is devastating for atheism because you cannot have a natural cause before nature exists. If the boundary is the beginning of nature, the cause must be supernatural, existing outside of nature. Part 2, Section 3, The Firing Squad. If the origin of the universe is a problem, the structure of the universe is a catastrophe for the skeptic. Physicists have discovered that the universe runs on a specific set of numbers, which are fundamental constants like the speed of light. Think of the universe like a massive soundboard in a recording studio. There are about 30 different knobs that must be set to specific values for the universe to function. If you turn any one of these knobs even a fraction to the left or right, the universe breaks. Let's look at the precision. Knob 1 is the force of gravity. This dial is calibrated to a precision of 1 part in 10 to the power of 60. To visualize this, imagine a tape measure stretching across the entire observable universe. If you move the gravity setting by just 1 inch, stars would not exist. Knob 2 is the cosmological constant. This controls the expansion rate of space. This is calibrated to 1 part in 10 to the power of 120. This number is so precise that there is no earthly analogy. It is the equivalent of throwing a dart from the edge of the universe and hitting a specific single atom on Earth. This evidence is so strong that it shakes even the most committed atheists. Sir Fred Hoyle was the astronomer who coined the term Big Bang. He was a staunch atheist, but when he discovered the fine-tuning, he famously wrote, quote, "A common sense interpretation of the facts suggests that a super intellect has monkeyed with physics, as well as with chemistry and biology, and that there are no blind forces worth speaking about in nature." End quote. Sir Roger Penrose, the Nobel Prize winner, calculated the total odds of the universe starting in a state capable of sustaining life. The number is 1 in 10, to the power of 10, to the power of 123. To visualize this, imagine a firing squad of 1 billion sharpshooters aiming at your heart from 10 feet away. They all fire. They all miss. Do you say, wow, I sure got lucky? No. The odds are so low that chance is not a scientific explanation. You assume they missed on purpose. The universe is not a lucky explosion. It is a setup. Section 4, the digital signature. Finally, we come to the most damning piece of evidence. Life itself. In the 19th century, we thought a cell was just a simple blob. Today, we know it is a bustling city, and in the center of that city is a library containing the most complex code in the universe, DNA. Here is the problem for the materialist. Matter does not create code. Physics can create patterns like snowflakes, but it cannot create information. If you see ripples on a beach, you infer wind. If you see a message written in the sand, you infer a mind. To understand why chance is impossible, we have to look at the building blocks of life. Proteins. A protein is a molecular machine. It is built by chaining together chemicals called amino acids. Think of a protein like a sentence. To make a functional protein, you have to arrange about 150 of these letters in the exact right order. But getting the order right is only half the battle. Once the chain is built, it must undergo protein folding. The string must instantly twist into a precise three-dimensional shape. If it folds incorrectly, it is useless junk. The probability of a single functional protein forming by chance is calculated at 1 in 10 to the power of 164. This calculation is just for one protein. A single simple cell requires hundreds of proteins. To believe this happened by accident is the mathematical equivalent of believing an explosion in a print shop could accidentally assemble a dictionary. Faced with these crushing odds, leading atheists like Stephen Hawking and Leonard Susskind proposed the multiverse. They admitted that without the multiverse, the fine-tuning implies a designer. So to explain the universe without God, they are forced to invent an infinite number of unobservable universes. They reject one unseen God because they lack physical proof, yet they readily accept trillions of unseen universes for which there is also zero physical proof. However, not every atheist was willing to play these mental gymnastics. Antony Flew, the leading voice of atheism for 50 years, shocked the world when he announced he now believed in God. Why? Because of the DNA evidence. He stated, quote, "The only satisfactory explanation for the origin of such end-directed, self-replicating life is an infinitely intelligent mind," end quote. Part 3, Section 5, The Moral Firewall. We have looked at the hardware, the calibration, and the code. Now we must address the software running on the human operating system, morality. Science can tell us what is, but science cannot tell us what ought to be. On a strictly materialist worldview, evil does not exist. If humans are just advanced animals, then murder and rape are just survival strategies. We may not like them, but we cannot call them evil. We can only call them unpopular. Atheists often argue that we don't need God, claiming we have a social contract where we simply vote on what is right and wrong. But there is a fatal flaw in this logic, and history exposed it at the Nuremberg trials. The Nazi leaders argued a chilling defense. They said they broke no laws, arguing that everything they did was legal under the laws of their own country. If morality is just what the majority decides, then the Nazis weren't wrong. They were just different. The chief prosecutor argued that this defense was invalid. He appealed to a higher law, a law of humanity that transcends the laws of any government. The tribunal agreed. But this creates a problem for the atheist. If there is a law that is higher than human opinion, where did it come from? You cannot have a moral law without a moral lawgiver. The fact that we feel this law pressing on our conscience is proof that we are not just biological accidents. We are moral agents, accountable to a judge. Section 6. Conclusion, the return to reason. The father of quantum mechanics, Werner Heisenberg, famously said, quote, "The first gulp from the glass of natural sciences will turn you into an atheist, but at the bottom of the glass, God is waiting for you," end quote. For years, atheists accused believers of using a God of the gaps argument. They argued that as science grew, God would shrink, but the exact opposite has happened. We are not arguing for God based on what we don't know. We are arguing for God based on what we do know. Evidence 1. The BGV theorem proved the universe has a hard start date. Anything that begins to exist must have a cause. Evidence 2. The Penrose number proved the universe is fine-tuned to a level that makes chance impossible. Evidence 3. DNA proved that life runs on digital code. Matter creates patterns, but never code. The more we learn about the universe, the harder it becomes to be an atheist. The gaps aren't closing. The data is piling up. When you strip away the emotion and look at the system's architecture, you are left with 4 undeniable facts. 1. The battery is running down. Someone must have charged it. 2. The dials are set. Someone must have calibrated them. 3. The software is written. Someone must have programmed it. 4. The law is written on our hearts. Someone must be the judge. The Bible anticipated this conclusion thousands of years ago, stating, quote, "For every house is built by someone, but God is the builder of everything," end quote. To look at the magnificent house of our universe with its fine-tuned lights, its genetic library, and its moral laws, and claim it built itself is no longer an act of reason. It is an act of blind faith. Thank you for listening. Please like and subscribe and visit quantumdisciple.com for more Christian research. Quantum Disciple out.